ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम भगवद गीता एज इट इज चैप्टर 6 टेक्स्ट 16 एंड 17 चैप्टर एंटाइटल ध्यान योग। नाति अश्नतस्तु योगोस्ति नाचैकान्तमनश्नत न चाति स्वप्नशीलस्य जाग्रतो नैव चार्जुन। नाति अश्नतस्तु योगोस्ति न चैकान्तमनश्नत न चाति स्वप्नशीलस्य जाग्रतो नैव चार्जुन। नाति अश्नतस्तु योगोस्ति न चैकान्तमनश्नत न चाति स्वप्नशीलस्य जाग्रतो नैव चार्जुन। एंड ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन। There is no possibility of one becoming a yogi, O Arjuna, if one eats too much or eats too little, sleeps too much or does not sleep enough. Purport. Regulation of diet and sleep is recommended herein for the yogis. Too much eating means eating more than is required to keep the body and soul together. There is no need for man to eat animals because there is an ample supply of grains, vegetables, fruits and milk. Such simple foodstuffs is considered to be the mode of goodness according to the Bhagavad Gita. Animal food is for those in the mode of ignorance. Therefore, those who indulge in animal food, drinking, smoking and eating food which is not first offered to Krishna will suffer sinful reaction because of eating only polluted things. Bhunjate te tva agam papam ye pachanti atma karanat. Anyone who eats for sense pleasures or cooks for himself, not offering his food to Krishna, eats only sin. One who eats sin and eats more than is allotted to him cannot execute perfect yoga. It is best that one eat only the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna. A person in Krishna consciousness does not eat anything which is not first offered to Krishna. Therefore, only the Krishna conscious person can attain perfection in yoga practice. Nor can one who artificially abstains from eating, manufacturing his own personal process of fasting, practice yoga. The Krishna conscious person observes fasting as it is recommended in the scriptures. He does not fast or eat more than is required, and he is thus competent to perform yoga practice. One who eats more than required will dream very much while sleeping, and he must consequently sleep more than is required. One should not sleep more than 6 hours daily. One who sleeps more than 6 hours out of 24 hours is certainly influenced by the mode of ignorance. A person in the mode of ignorance is lazy and prone to sleep a great deal. Such a person cannot perform yoga. And translation. Yukta ahara viharasya, yukta cheshtasya karmasu, yukta swapnava bodhasya, yogo bhavati dukkha. Translation. He who is regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation and work can mitigate all material pains by practicing the yoga system. Translation once again, text 16. There is no possibility of one becoming a yogi, O Arjuna, if one eats too much or eats too little, sleeps too much or does not sleep enough. Text 17. He who is regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, recreation and work can mitigate all pains by practicing the yoga system. Hare Krishna. Seeking the blessings of all the Vaishnavas, I can speak something for my purification. This verse from Bhagavad Gita is very, very important for a sadhaka, for a practicing devotee. So this verse basically speaks about what are the prerequisites for one who wants to become a yogi. Just as when a person becomes a doctor, one of the major prerequisites is that he must have a degree. Similarly, here, for a person to become a yogi, these are the prerequisites. These are must to become, to be self-controlled, basically. The baseline or the underlining principle of this verse is control or regulation. And just simply having degree for a doctor is not enough. But having knowledge of that field is very, very important. Similarly, just to have this prerequisite is not enough. But to have the knowledge of the Supreme is what we can call as a real yogi. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, same chapter, last verse, who is the best yogi? He's saying, Yogi nam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamomataha. He's saying, of all the yogis, yogi nam api sarvesham, there are so many yogis, but of all the yogis, one who abides in me, and one who renders transcendental service unto me with faith, he is the best of all the yogis, according to me. So, simply following this rules and regulation does not make one yogi. Just as simply having a degree but not having a knowledge does not make one a doctor. Similarly, there are so many people in this world who strictly follow this rules and regulation. They are very strict as far as their eating habits are concerned, as far as their sleeping habits are concerned. They sleep well, before everybody sleeps, and they eat, very little. But that does not make a person completely a yogi. So these are just a prerequisite, and these regulations are just, they are not spiritual in itself. The rules and regulations are not spiritual in itself. They bring a person to a platform from where he can actually perform his devotional service, or from where he can perform his yogic practices very properly. Because when one follows this rules and regulations strictly, then he'll have a very healthy, fit physical body. His body will be fit to perform yogic practices. So these rules and regulations are not in themselves spiritual. But when Krishna is added, then everything becomes spiritual. Why I'm telling this is, there are so many people in this world who may be following this verse very strictly, but they have nothing to do with God. So, this principle can be applied even by a person who has nothing to do with practicing yoga. It will be beneficial. But here, Krishna is specifically giving this regulations for a sadhaka or a yogi, or for a person who wants to become a yogi. So basically we can say that Bhagavad Gita is not simply a religious text. Bhagavad Gita is
a text of preventive science. Just as in medicine there is a subject called as PSM. It's called the full form is preventive social medicine, something like that. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita is also a preventive medicine. It's a textbook of science. Why? Because Bhagavad Gita is giving us this instruction. If we can follow this instruction, it can prevent us from many miseries, as Lord Krishna says. One can mitigate all miseries. Yogo bhavati dukkha. One can mitigate all the miseries related to one's body and one's mind. So, here Krishna is giving us, you know, health tips. You know, how do we actually, you know, keep our body fit so that we can actually, you know, perform our sadhana, perform our devotional practices very, very strictly. So, and people of this world, basically, they see what is suiting their, what suits their interest. And whatever suits their interest from the scriptures, they will pick up that. But they neglect the other part of it. Say for example, Ashtanga Yoga, this is the Dhyan Yoga chapter and title. Now, Ashtanga Yoga consists of 8 processes mainly. Beginning from Yam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, Pratyahar, Dharana, Dhyan, Samadhi. Now, nowadays what has happened, what is happening is people, they take certain part of this yogic practices, Ashtanga Yoga, and they think that for them, it's a good alternative, you know, to keep their body fit. It's a good alternative to any other pathies like allopathy, homeopathy, Ayurveda, naturopathy. So this is a very good alternative to keep my body fit and healthy. So they will pick up only, you know, certain part of this yoga practices and neglect the other 8, out of 8 there are other 6, Yam, Niyam, Dhyan, Pratyaha, Dhana, Dhyan, Samadhi. They completely neglect that. Why? Because asana and pranayam today have become like it is rampant. People are looking forward for yoga sanas so that they can keep their body fit. Not for attaining samadhi, but for getting their interest fulfilled. So, so this is what we see, that people have this mentality of a person, you know, who had a hen. That's an example, there's a story, who had a hen, and a hen would every day give, you know, gold eggs, golden eggs. So this person, he was very much captivated and he thought that, you know, this hen is giving me so much profit. But he thought that only the later part, the back part of the hen is giving me profit. But the front part of the hen, that is the mouth, requires a lot of investment. He has to feed the hen, you know, lot of grains, lot of things are needed to keep this hen healthy. So that person thought, let me just, you know, keep the back part and let me just remove the front part. So he cut the hen into half, thinking, now I have the later part and I'll get all the golden eggs. But is it possible? It's not possible. Similarly, people of this world, they select certain part of the scriptures which suits their interest and neglect the main part and think that they are doing something spiritual. So Krishna here in this verse is telling that this is specifically for the yogis. There are many people who may use this verse for their own self-interest. But Krishna is really specifically mentioning that, of course, it is Bhagavad Gita is universal. Is applied under all time, under all place, under all circumstances. So we have to understand that the underlying principle of this verse is regulation or control. This is very, very important. Now, it's ironical to see that everybody in this world is trying to control something or other. Say, a husband is trying to control his wife. Our parents are trying to control children. Or boss is trying to control his subordinate. Or one company is trying to control over another country. Or one nation is trying to control over another nation. But when it comes to controlling one's own senses, people badly fail. When it comes to controlling the inner system, people can't. But our scriptures give us a wonderful instruction. Rupa Goswami, he tells us that one who can control the inner self, one who can control the inner system, one who can control his mind and senses, he can actually control everything around. He is eligible to make disciples all over the world. So this is the secret. But most of the people, they fail in controlling the senses. And that's the reason where problem begins. That's the point where problem begins. Here Krishna is saying, there is no possibility of one becoming a yogi if one eats too much or eats too little. People go to extremes. They either give up completely eating, they fast, or they keep on eating, they just voraciously keep on eating. So Krishna is here trying to tell us that we have to control our senses to such an extent that we we don't eat too much. At the same time, we don't eat too little. And this is called as yukta. And this is what is Bhagavad Gita teaching us. The art of balancing. Samatvam yoga muchyate. Not too much, not too little. And what does this yukta mean? For us, for a sadhaka, it means that honestly, we should eat only that much which is required. To keep, as Prabhupada says, to keep one's body and soul together. And sleep as much as it is required to keep body fit. And Srila Prabhupada, in one of his lectures, he was giving an example. He says that if you are an ant, then eat like an ant. And if you are an elephant, then eat like an elephant. That is what is yukta. What if an ant starts eating like an elephant and an elephant starts eating like an ant? Then there'll be a mismatch, probably. Ant won't survive and an elephant won't survive. So Prabhupada would always say this famous statement, if you sleep more, then you become lazy. And if you sleep less, then you become crazy. So what is important for us is to balance. Not to go to extremes by giving up completely eating, sleeping, or by eating too much and sleeping too much. So, Jai Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagavan Ki Jai. So we'll try to see exactly what happens if one tries to violate this principle given in this verse of Bhagavad Gita. Let's take one example. Krishna here speaks about eating. Let's take this example, eating, ahar. Now, scripture explains that, or even Bhagavad Gita explains that anna bhavanti bhutani, that human beings, they basically sustain on this food grains, ahar. So, every day, several times in a day, we see in every part of this world, people follow the same ritual. People follow this ritual, common, that is eating. So how important is this eating? We can't survive without eating, no doubt. In fact, even there is one verse which says that ahar shuddho sattva shuddhi, sattva shuddho dhruvarmati. That everything depends upon what one eat. Our mind is formed by what we eat. Our intelligence is formed by what we eat. Aha shuddho sattva shuddhi, sattva shuddho dhruvarmati. Not only that, even according to Ayurveda, there are three pillars which sustain the body. And one of the pillars is ahar. Second is nidra. And third is brahmacharya. So this ahar, nidra and brahmacharya, the three pillars that will sustain the body in long run. So one has to be very, very careful as far as eating habits are concerned, as far as sleeping habits are concerned, and as far as following the celibacy is concerned. There is one more verse in one of the books of Ayurveda. It says that prana prana bhutam annam, annam loko bidhavati, varna prasadam saumyatvam, jivitam pratibha sukham, tushti pushti balam medha, sarvam anye pratishtam. What does this mean? That people in this world are running after what? Annam loko bidhavati. People are running for what? For this eating. Why? Because eating is that that thing which will sustain this body. But according to scriptures, it is explained that although this eating, that is ahar, sustains this body only if it is taken in right amount, right proportion. But the same ahar can be the cause of one's destruction if one eats too much or if one eats too little. Even Ayurveda says this. And today what's happening? What is happening is that people are dying not out of eating too less. People are dying because of excessive consumption of food. It's a known fact. And one of the examples, one out of many examples of overeating, people overeat, which causes obesity. We all have heard what obesity is all about. this is now spreading, it is becoming common, spreading rampantly in specially developed countries, and it is said specially in Western countries like United States of America, Singapore, Japan, Hong Kong, where even the children are developing obesity. They are becoming obese. What is the reason? There are five main reasons given. The first and foremost reason given is overeating. Because they eat only junk food. That is the first and foremost reason. Second, television. Because they sit in front of television for more than 7 to 8 hours a day, they don't move from one place, as if they are in samadhi. They just don't move. And the third reason is no exercise. Children, they don't play any games. They play video games. So that is one of the reasons. They just keep on sitting. So fourth reason is sedentary lifestyle. Sedentary lifestyle means a person keeps on sitting at one place, don't move here and there. Basically, no physical work. And the fifth is they sleep for more than 10 to 12 hours. Children. So the survey statistics says that this is the main reason for even children to develop obesity. In fact, it is said that in America, half of the adults are constantly trying to reduce their weight. They are constantly endeavoring to reduce their body weight. As a result, the whole of America is spending annually $30 billion just on reducing fat. $30 billion. Now $30 billion, if a person is controlled, if his senses are controlled, then this $30 billion can be used for feeding who don't get food. People complain, government is saying, we don't have enough land to harvest crops. But so many thousands and thousands of acres of land are used for what? Tobacco plantations. Or for, cattle feeding. They feed a lot of the food that is required for cattle. And though that cattle is then slaughtered, so many thousands and thousands of acres are used for that. So it is said that $30 billion are used every year by American people to reduce fat. Not only that, but it is said that once people start with this exercise of reducing fat, it is said that only 2.5% of people actually get their desired goal. Only 2.5%. And it is said that and out of that 2.5% of people who actually reach their desired goal, most of them, they take this as a liberty to again come back to their old habits. So again, they start eating voraciously. And what's the result? Their weight goes up. Fat goes up. And it is said that most of the people, they give up right after first day. Why? Because they think it's way beyond my capacity to stop eating or control my dietary habits. So, this is one of the thousands of diseases caused by overeating. In fact, there is one term in medicine. It's called the diseases of the affluent. Here is a doctor sitting. He knows. Diseases of the affluent means what? The diseases are caused not by undereating, not by eating less, but by eating too much. Or say, for example, by improper dietary habits, improper lifestyles. So this verse is very, very important. Control, regulation is what is very, very difficult, but is so very important. So many diseases of the affluent are caused, atherosclerosis. Then most of the obese people, 85% of the obese people have heart-related problems, it is said. So high blood pressure, atherosclerosis, cholesterol, then whatnot. only reason, eating too much. In fact, in during Olympics, in one of the stadiums in China, there was a big hoarding. And this hoarding said, it was written that this stadium has a capacity, this stadium can hold 1,20,000 Chinese. But it can hold only 80,000 Americans. The reason? They are obese. And it is said that at that time, the size of the seats for which people would sit on was average between 15 to 17 inches. But then, they had, after a few years, they had to reconstruct the seats, and they had to increase the size of the seat from 15 to 17 inches to 22 to 24 inches. Just imagine. What is the reason? People are gaining. No. So much of fat, unnecessary. The reason being, one of the reasons, one of the major reasons being overeating. So it's quite natural that nowadays people, they live to eat rather than eat to live. In fact, we have a term in our Vaishnava tradition that Vaishnavas die to live and living spreads the holy name around. Something that. So here we can say that the people, they die to eat. And eating spreads the diseases around. This is what is happening all over the world. So, it is said that what we eat is the single largest influence over our body. It is the single largest influence over our body. And in the scriptures it is said that dharmartha kama mokshanam arogya moolam uttamam. For even performing artha kama and even dharma, arogya is very, very important. Your health has to be fit, then you can perform all these things. But if your health is not fit, where is the question of even sense enjoyment? So for sense enjoyment, if we need a healthy body, what to speak of healthy body in case of performing our sadhana? It's very much required. Our health has to be very much fit. That's why Krishna is saying here, but one has to be very, very controlled as far as eating habits are concerned, as far as sleeping habits are concerned. And because food is that fuel that drives the body. It is the only fuel that drives the body. So if we abuse our body, then our body won't last long in service of the Lord. It's not possible. So what is important is that we be determined and control our senses. That's what Krishna is expecting from us. And it is said that every food that we take, it affects our body just as a powerful dose of medicine affects a disease. What I'm trying to say is, we just can't eat anything and everything. Just as there are specific things mentioned in the scriptures. Here Prabhupada specifically mentions that there is no need for man to eat animals. Prabhupada is blunt. Because there is ample supply of grains, vegetables, fruits and milk. In fact, people say that we get a lot of strength by eating meat. But we have in nature animal like elephant who are pure vegetarians. They don't need any meat to strengthen their muscles. They eat what? They eat only dry grass. So it's a misconception. In fact, we'll try to see. In fact, there is one famous speaker, Peter Barwash, one of the powerful speakers. He lists 30 reasons why one should not eat meat. 30 reasons. Not one, not two, 30. And every reason makes sense. We'll try to see that. But before that, we'll try to see how, in fact, up until recently, it was noticed that meat eating was considered a sign of prosperity. And if the people would eat legumes or people would eat grains, that would be considered a sign of poverty. But now the same people who were saying this, they have come out with conclusion that if a person is spending first half of his life giving money to the meat industry, if a person is spending first half of his life spending money by giving to meat industry, then most likely that same person in the second half of his life, he'll have to spend money giving to medical industry. So, it is said that one third of one's income sustains the body, and two third of one's income sustains the doctor. Why? Because they have, so many patients. Like I was studying in my Ayurveda, and during that time, this was my observation that most of the people who came for treatment, when they were asked, are you vegetarians or non-vegetarians? So they said, we are non-vegetarians. Basically, there are very few vegetarians in this world. In fact, I was just asking one devotee about this report, and he told me a surprising report. He told me that in India, in the land of Dharma, there are only 25-30% of people who are vegetarians. That means rest of them are non-vegetarians. In America, there are only 3% of the population who are following vegetarianism. Rest others are practically non-vegetarians. Why I am trying to tell this? Because Prabhupada is emphasizing here in this purport that there is no need for man. Now, Prabhupada is not telling something haphazardly. There is a reason behind. It's a science. In fact, people today just eat what they think they want. But rather, they should be eating what their body is capable of handling. That's very important. People say that meat contains a lot of proteins. But one thing according to Ayurveda is that it's not how much protein you eat that is important. But how much your body can digest that protein, that is important. So one may keep on eating, a food that is rich in protein. But is that body capable of digesting? A person may keep on eating meat, keep on eating food which is full of proteins. But still he remains thin. Why? Body is not in a position to digest. So it completely refutes or completely defeats this theory that, okay, I need to eat non-veg just because it gives me a lot of proteins. In fact, as I was saying, this Peter Barwash, he is giving 30 reasons for a person why not to eat meat. I'll just try to list few of them and it really makes sense. He says that first and foremost, he says that all the animal products, they contain lot of cholesterol. I'm sorry, I'm just giving something related to health, but this is what is mentioned here. He says that most of the animal products contains lot of cholesterol. And our body is capable of digesting only 100 to 300 milligrams of cholesterol every day. And he mentions that our body has a metabolic, our body's metabolism rate is so slow as far as cholesterol digestion is concerned that that it can digest only 100 to 300 milligrams. But he says that every individual in America is ingesting 500 to 600 milligrams of cholesterol every day. That means a lot of investment for the arteries, a lot of, deposition of cholesterol in the arteries will naturally take place. So he says, the first thing is, from health point of view, it's bad. Why? Contains lot of cholesterol. Second, contains no fibers. Now fibers, we say, fruit contains lot of fibers, vegetable contains lot of fibers, and they are good for the body. Why? Because fibers helps to flush all the toxins away from the body. But when there are no fibers, that means what? That means the flushing system goes down. And flushing system goes down means what? Constipation. Simple. The body gets constipated. And when body gets constipated, all the toxins start accumulating more and more and more in the body. Not only that, he says that this flesh or meat contains a lot of fat. And because body can digest only certain amount of fat, or body can burn only certain amount of fat, the remnants, they start depositing, especially near our belly. Not only that, but he says that flesh, it harbors lot of deadly bacteria. And he says that because flesh is an excellent insulator, not all the microbes are killed, even when the flesh is cooked properly. So, lot of bacteria survival, bacteria growth takes place. And it is said that this somebody was saying that this food, before it reaches on the table, it has traveled thousands and thousands of miles. And a person doesn't know when it was packed, when it was cooked. So we can just imagine what will be the effect of such type of food on the body. It's nothing but pure abuse for a body. Not only that, but says that this flesh or meat contains high concentration of environmental poisons. Also, because these animals are raised on large quantity of hormones, antibiotics, medicines and drugs, so we become the recipients, or we get that maha of what animals have consumed. Higher doses of medicine, higher doses of hormones, antibiotics. And it says that flesh causes a lot of stress in the body. Why? Because it causes stress upon the immune system. How? It says that when one person eats meat, then what happens? The WBC count, the white blood corpuscles count, goes high. That means what? That there are a lot of toxins in the body. The level of toxins have gone up. So the immune system goes down. It makes sense from medical point of view, from health point of view. From ecologically point of view, it is said that so much soil erosion, so much deforestation is taking place because of this one reason: maintaining slaughterhouses. Not only that, this is a temple and we are not supposed to speak so much disgusting things, but these are the facts. And above all, he gives a very powerful reason which is unnoticed, which is under researched up till now. What is that? That entire meat is permeated with the powerful vibrations of pain and negative emotions of that animal which we eat. Ahar shuddho sattva shuddhi sattva shuddho dhruvarmati. Our mind, our body is formed on what we eat. So naturally, when we eat all these disgusted things, then the outcome will be the modes of ignorance prevails. Prabhupada writes, animal food is for those in the mode of ignorance. Therefore, those who indulge in animal food, drinking and smoking and eating food which is not first offered to Krishna, will suffer sinful reactions because of eating only polluted things. It is nothing but pollution. It is nothing but pollutant. So from health point of view, from ecological point of view, from economical point of view, it's very costly. You buy a few kgs of grains, you will get it for a few, 100 rupees, and you buy few ounce or few pounds of flesh, it costs hundreds of rupees. From social, from ecological, from economical, from spiritual, from health point of view, he mentions it's not worth eating. So, in fact, there are certain quotes. I found out these quotes are very interesting. A quote by George Bernard Shaw. He says that when a man wants to murder a tiger, he calls it a sport. When a man goes out for a hunting and hunts a tiger, he thinks that it is just a sportive event. But when a tiger wants to murder a man, man calls it a ferocity. We think this is murder. Another quote, as long as man massacre animals, they will kill each other. Indeed, he who sows the seed of murder and pain cannot reap joy and love. Pythagoras, he is saying this. In fact, as one quotation even by Albert Einstein was a pure vegetarian. And he says that vegetarian diet is very, very important for developing fine tissues in the brains. Not only that, there's one more quotation. It says, a dead cow or sheep lying in a pasture is recognized as a carrion. That same sort of carcass dressed up and hung in a butcher's stall is called as food. We call it as a food. There are so many quotations, but I won't go into details. So, what I'm trying to say is, what we eat is the single largest cause of how our body is formed. And Prabhupada here, again in the verse, Yukta Ahar Viharasya, Prabhupada is quoting that there is no need for a man to eat such disgusted items. So who can say that Bhagavad Gita is simply a book of knowledge, Bhagavad Gita is simply a book of Hindu faith, or Bhagavad Gita is simply a mythology? It's a science. If we can simply follow this one verse, we can actually mitigate all the pains, as Krishna says, Yukta Ahar Viharasya, Yukta Cheshta Cha Karmasu, Yukta Swapna Abodasya, Yogo Bhavati Dukkaha. This is eating. Sleeping part is concerned. Prabhupada says one should not eat, one should not sleep more than 6 hours. Why? According to Ayurveda, if one eats more, then naturally the mode of ignorance, tamogun or kapha, increases more. And when kapha increases more, body naturally becomes heavy. And when body becomes heavy, it becomes physically inactive. And as a result, person develops lethargy. And as a result of lethargy, that person sleeps more than needed. And when person sleeps more than required, then what happens? There's a list of diseases that is caused by oversleeping. So Prabhupada is making a perfect statement. If you are an ant, then eat like an ant. If you are an elephant, eat like an elephant. That is control. Honestly, whatever is required, just take it for sustenance. In fact, Prabhupada also writes about sleeping in the purport of Yukta Ahar Viharasya. Prabhupada says that devotee, I'll just read, as far as sleeping is concerned, a Krishna conscious person is always alert in the discharge of his duties in Krishna consciousness, and therefore any unnecessary time spent sleeping is considered a great loss. This is very important. Our acharyas, they considered even regular sleeping hours to be a waste of time. And Prabhupada gives the example of Rupa Goswami. Prabhupada says ahead of this purport, Rupa Goswami would sleep. He quotes this principle of avyasa kalatvam for a devotee who is on the platform of bhav. For him, even to spend one moment, even to lose one moment is a great loss. And he quotes Rupa Goswami, quotes Haridas Thakur, and he would, Prabhupada quotes that Haridas Thakur would chant 192 rounds every day, and unless until his rounds would be finished, he would not eat. And he says that Rupa Goswami would sleep very less for 2 hours, 3 hours. For Raghunath Das Goswami to eat, to drink even a lift cup of buttermilk was sense gratification. Srila Prabhupada, who although traveled all around the world, wherever he would be, he would see to it that he would reduce his sleeping habits. Because a great soul in the service of the Lord, they reduce eating, sleeping, mating is of no question. Defending, they are completely surrendered. Prabhupada said that for a person who has given up eating, sleeping, mating and defending, he is liberated. So Prabhupada would spend very few hours, say 9 to 12, he would sleep, take rest, and from 12 to 4, he would translate. He would write the purports, Bhaktivedanta purports. Whatever was needed in the service of the Lord. Today is the disappearance of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. If we'll read his schedule, it is way beyond our comprehension. I have just few minutes left. I'll just briefly go through the schedule which he would follow. It is said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur would go to sleep between 7:30 to 8 in the evening. And he would get up at 10 p.m. 10 p.m. when most of the people in this world, they have just, rise from their bed for late parties. He would get up at 10 p.m. and from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. he would write literatures. He would write books with his small little oil lamp. He would write literatures. Then from 4 to 4:30 he would take little rest. From 4:30 to 7 he would every day chant his rounds. Then from 7 to 7:30 he would answer to correspondence. From 7:30 to 9:30 he would read scriptures, at the same time receive guests and contemplate on the answers to any religious questions. From 9:30 to 9:45 he would take again little rest, and then 9:45 he would take breakfast. What breakfast he would take? Little milk and some chapatis. At 10 o'clock he would go for work. He was a magistrate. From 10 to 1 he was working in government court, and from 10 to 1 he would solve 30 to 50 cases, which for an ordinary judge would take years. Within 5 minutes he would take decisions, and 2 minutes he would take to write judgment. So from 10 to 1 he would be there for his work. At 1 o'clock he would return back, and till 2 he would be there at home, and after 2 again he would go back for work. 2 to 5 he would work, and 5 o'clock he would return home. And evening, as soon as he would return from office, he would dictate to his secretary different scriptures, and then he would eat little, some rice, some milk and some chapatis, and that would be the day, that would be the end of his
that day's work.
So we see that great souls in the service of the Lord, they give up completely actually. They, for them, taking care of body is not so important. It's important in one sense, but they do whatever is required. Not eating too much, not eating too less, not sleeping too much, not sleeping too less. So, this verse is a torchlight for us who are on this path of practicing devotional service. And Prabhupada finally he writes, as far as work is concerned, a Krishna conscious person does not do anything which is not connected with Krishna's interest, and thus his work is always regulated and is untainted by sense gratification. Since there is no question of sense gratification, there is no material leisure for a person in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was once asked, Swamiji, what is recreation in Krishna consciousness? Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness means recreation. Prabhupada said, dancing is recreation. Prabhupada said, chanting is recreation. Hearing about the Lord refreshes one's consciousness. That is recreation. So, everything is there in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada says, the best way to control one's eating habits is eat Krishna prasad. And not to eat anything that is not offered to the Lord. So if we can simply follow these principles in our life, then as Krishna says, yogo bhavati dukkha, we can actually mitigate all the material pains of this world. Thank you very much. Thank you for your patient hearing. I beg forgiveness if I have spoken anything wrong, if it has hurt somebody's sentiments. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, jai.